Hello, and welcome once again to Learning Digital Photography. I'm your host, Jason Anderson, and with me on the show is a local photog. I'm doing a little bit of a local deal here. I'm welcoming Michelle Hedstrom to the show. Michelle, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Jason. It's great to be here.
Yeah, we're actually live. We are sitting in a park in Arvada, Colorado, so this is a live recording. It's not Skype. It's not on computers. It's actually live and in person, so we're actually interacting. There is no video. I'm not going back to video yet, so for those of you that are audiophiles, you enjoy it. For those of you that are videophiles, so sorry.
better for me.
It's better for both of us. It just made more sense, and plus we hadn't really connected in real life, and since we live so close, we figured, what the heck. Well, anyway, the reason why I brought Michelle on, and I want you to go into more detail about this, because we started talking about your segue into sports and your segue into photography and how all that's working out for you. So why don't you first give a little bit of background. I keep looking down at the recorder, and I should be looking at you, right?
It's all good.
But, yeah, just give a little bit of background, how you got into photography, and you just came out to Colorado recently, too, right?
5 years ago.
Oh, so you've been here 5 years?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. You still have your other area code number.
This is the reason to change your cell phone anymore.
No one cares about area codes anymore anyway.
You have free long distance on your cell phones anyways.
Exactly.
You should, and if you don't, you got to switch your plan.
Switch it now. So we were talking about your background a little bit, and I was a little intrigued about this because you started, go ahead. Why don't you just start?
Yeah, so I'm actually a complete tech computer geek. When I graduated from college with a computer science degree.
Okay.
Went immediately to work for Apple Computer.
Oh, really?
I was doing developer tech support for them. And
so you didn't tell me that.
Yeah, now I'm telling you.
There you go.
And I actually was doing, I was at various computer companies doing, you know, I started moving into web applications and things like that.
So you're like one of those smart types, aren't you?
If you say so.
If you're working for Apple, they don't exactly hire people off the street.
Yeah. So that was fun. I did all that for probably, I would say, 13 years. And then one layoff too many, because it was my third time getting laid off from a company, which honestly in the tech industry is completely normal.
Right.
Usually, because you have the whole dot bomb thing.
Exactly.
Stuff like that. And
dot bomb.
Yeah. And then the last time I got laid off, which was actually from Yahoo, I realized I didn't enjoy what I was doing anymore, and kind of said, instead of looking immediately for another job, I wanted to kind of screw my head back on and just let some time pass. And I said, hey, I've got this cool Canon 20D. I probably should learn how to use it. Well, my husband was really into photography, but he was into getting the gear.
Right.
So
we're all gearheads on some level.
It's
just a matter of degree, right?
Exactly. So I started kind of really getting into learning the camera,
cool.
You know, watching all the Kelby shows.
And how long ago was that now that you got into photography?
That was, like, seriously, probably a little over a year, year and a half, I would say.
Oh, just a year and a half ago?
Yeah.
Oh,
it wasn't even that long. I went to Photoshop World last year.
Did you like Photoshop World?
That was insane.
Is that what hooked you, like, hook, line,
and
sinker?
That was it, actually. I felt so much like a fish out of water there that first time because, you know, it's like, oh my God, there's Scott Kelby and all these other guys. And I learned so much stuff.
It's interesting because I've heard by like day two that so much information overload or just such a brain dome that it's hard to absorb after that second day.
I was taking notes. They give you the full workbook of all the classroom notes.
Right. You get all the workbook.
So you can go back. But yeah, it's insane. And then I kind of started just networking because I'm very social, so that's my favorite part. It's not just the learning part. I really enjoy the socialization because I went there not knowing anybody, and now I know a ton of people.
Right. So. And I think that's the fun part about photography. Maybe that's something we can delve into a little more, is the photography and the social side, because especially when you photograph people, you're often interacting with those people either before you take the shot to get up to them and break the ice, so to speak, and also afterwards, especially in your case, because you're doing a lot of sports photography, right?
Yep.
So, and you, we were just talking about this before I started recording when she said, when you said, I'm looking down at the recording device and you're sitting right here, folks. But yeah, when you started saying that you use recording mechanisms to that you transcribe where you interview athletes after you've done a photo shoot.
Yes, so I tried that was something new I kind of tried. The Metal Militia was coming out here as part of the Mayhem Festival.
Right.
And unfortunately, I was bummed because it turns out that the Comfort Dental Amphitheater is too small for them to actually jump. So they didn't perform, but I went there and I actually talked to them. I just went up to their, you know, they had a trailer signing autographs, and I said, hey, can I get in just a quick interview with one of you guys? And we went out back behind the trailer by all the bikes and in just 5-10 minute interview with Jimmy Fitzpatrick, and that was pretty cool.
No kidding. That's very cool. That's awesome.
So that was cool. So yeah, so opportunities. I mean, you have to be social to some respect. I mean,
right.
you can't be scared of getting told no. You have
right.
to go in expecting no, but hoping for a yes.
What is it, the fear of rejection, they say?
A lot of people have that.
You just got to get over it and suck it off.
Because you're no worse. If you get told no, you're no worse off than you were before.
Right.
Because you weren't doing it before, and now at least you know that you didn't have a chance to do it.
Right.
But then you get cases where you might as well just ask, especially
right.
in terms of, you know, when I was starting out getting concert credentials.
Right.
You have to ask. There's no choice.
Right. It's not. They're going to come up to you and say, hey, we know this is this no-name photographer.
And you've never shot a concert before.
And we'd like to give you credentials to come shoot our show.
So, I mean, obviously, you can't just start out going to some place like Red Rocks and
right.
saying, hey, I want to shoot Sublime. Can I have a credential?
Right.
So you have to hit up the smaller clubs, smaller bands.
So, well, that kind of is a good segue because you started talking about getting into photography, and then how did you find your niche? Like you said, you're doing band photography.
In concerts.
In concert photography,
yep.
But now I see you're doing a lot of sports type things because you had that image of the week in the NAP portfolio section with that BMX bike, and I was
freestyle motocross.
The freestyle motocross, and I was just like, oh my god, that's sick! And that's actually how we connected because I was like, oh, she's in Arvada.
That's
hey,
not too far.
We should hook up because I live in Arvada too. Yeah. So, yeah. So tell me how you made that transition from learning about photography into bands and then into sports.
It wasn't really a natural transition. I didn't know what kind of photography I wanted to do. I figured, oh, I'm in Colorado. I'll do landscapes and wildlife.
Sure.
Because this is Colorado and Colorado's got the best landscape.
It is.
No offense to anyone not in Colorado, but it does. But I just, at some point I started doing that and I realized it really wasn't what I was enjoying. And I didn't have the patience to do wildlife photography at all.
Yes, we're recording.
Yeah. And if you talk to someone like Moose Peterson, he'll say, oh, yeah, I got out at the crack of dawn and I sat for 6 hours to get this one shot. I don't have that kind of patience.
You don't have that instant
gratification.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So then ended up being kind of a fluke, actually, is I met last year Alan Hess at Photoshop World in Vegas.
Right.
And he teaches the concert photography pre-con.
That looks like it's pretty cool.
And it looked a lot of fun, and he's a great guy, so I actually signed up for it in Orlando. And
So you've been to Vegas, Orlando.
And I'm going back to Vegas.
So now you're going to be going to...
This will be my third one.
Third consecutive, wow.
Yes. And right before the Orlando conference, there was an event in downtown Denver called Denver Big Air, where they set up a big snowboard ramp, and they actually had a snowboard ski competition, and they also had a stage set up, and they had One Republic play. And I happened to just get my camera in, because I called them, and they said there were no camera restrictions, and I had happened to sit in front of the stage for One Republic.
You just happened.
I moved over to the stage before the snowboarding stopped.
I was about to say, wow, that's just pure happenstance.
Exactly.
You just happened to be there on stage.
I didn't know what I was doing too much, but I shot the band, and I was like, wow, that was actually a lot of fun. Hey, I'm taking this class in 3 weeks.
Right.
Maybe I'll get more into it. And that kind of got me hooked on the concert stuff.
Very cool.
And then sports, I've always loved sports. I'm actually the biggest tomboy ever. I've been playing sports since I was a little kid playing wiffle ball.
Right.
So, and I'm really getting big into motocross now.
So I was about to say, is that your favorite one then, the motocross one?
I think motocross is my favorite one to shoot. Not just freestyle, but motocross races. We have a place here called Thunder Valley.
Right.
Where they actually have motocross races about once a month, plus the national motocross is there.
Really?
And I got to shoot that, and that was just phenomenally fun.
Cool. So how does that work? Do you, like, take the photos at these events, and then do you send them off to the venue? Do you send them to the... How do you know who to send them to?
Well, so right now I'm shooting for the Examiner
Right, which, Denver.
Yeah, so it's examiner.com, and they have a Denver-based version of it. It's basically starting from kind of scratch. The pay is pretty much non-existent, but it's a way
that's
to
all photography
kind of,
work.
Yeah, exactly. But you have, and you have to start from someplace.
Right.
You can't go from having no portfolio to suddenly having a big portfolio.
Right.
So you need to start taking shots. And at least I'm able to get in places and get my stuff seen by people. So I'm taking shots for that and writing the articles. And I pretty much have full control over what I write and take, as long as it's within the sports and the concert genre.
Right. And that's pretty cool that you're able to do both of those. Because I know some people who are phenomenal photographers and can't put together a coherent sentence. And then I know some people who are phenomenal writers, and they try and do the photography side of it, and it's just, it's painful to see sometimes, or painful to read, depending on which tack you take.
Yeah.
So finding people that can actually do both is really quite enjoyable, and especially when it's like what you're doing with the Examiner or with like magazines. Because I know a lot of authors in magazines are also photographers. So they'll write their own content, and they'll produce their own photos, and when those two things join together, it really is a good thing. It
yep.
really is a good thing. And I think it takes a certain amount of creativity and talent just to do that. So check her out over at examiner.com. Do you have like a /?
You can actually get to all my articles if you go to my website at www.ogrephotography.com.
We're going to talk about that in a minute.
Okay. So he'll spell it out.
Ogre Photography. We'll throw a link in the show notes so you don't have to stop your commute or your workout or whatever to
But I've got a link on top there to all my articles that I've written with all the slideshows.
Okay, cool. So that's where they can find your work. And then I guess also Ogre Photography, since you brought it up.
Big green ogre.
I want to get into that because this is a big green ogre. It's kind of cool. Yeah, and go check her out over at Ogre Photography, and you'll see what we're talking about. My question, though, is where did that come from?
There is a story behind that.
I want to hear this story because I know there had to be a story.
Okay, so my husband is an even bigger tech geek than I am, believe it or not.
I didn't know that was possible. But, okay.
And when the internet first kind of started getting big-ish,
right.
You know, this was way back early 90s, he registered the domain ogre.com. So now whenever we've created freelance companies or web design, we always call it, you know, Ogre Communications or something related to that because
right.
we have ogre.com as our domain. So when I was looking to kind of create a photography company, you know, the first thing you want to do is use your name. So
right.
that would have been Michelle Hedstrom Photography. Funnily enough, there actually is a Michelle Hedstrom who happens to do photography.
Go figure.
So, and she popped up first in the search rankings, so I didn't want to get the two of us confused.
Right.
So I kind of did a play on our Ogre domain and used Ogre Photography instead.
So what started you with the, like, why did he pick Ogre, though, when it first was...
I believe it was based on a role-playing game.
Oh,
one of the
okay.
tabletop
like Dungeons and Dragons
games. Yeah, I don't remember off the top of my head what it was. I think
well,
it was one of the game companies.
All the geeks have done that kind of
yeah.
thing. Yeah. Played those role-playing games kind of stuff, so
yep.
no worries. Well, that's cool, though. So Ogre Photography is the one, and then theexaminer.com, and we can search by your name. That'll get to all your articles
yep.
there as well. And then your NAP portfolio. What prompted you to join? Because you said you just got into photography like a year and a half, 2 years ago.
But I've been a NAP member for at least a year before that.
So you and I kind of sensed that when I saw your portfolio on there. I was like, how did you get into NAP and then get into photography? Because it's usually the other way around, where someone is like a graphic design artist, or they're using Photoshop or whatever for website design or whatever. So join that and then doing that, and then they become a photographer. So the question, I guess, there is, were you always into photography, or was it just this last year?
Well, I kind of always enjoyed photography, but I was never really seriously into it.
Okay.
But a few years ago, we were looking for a way to kind of start cataloging our photos better. You know, we had underwater photos that we had taken. We had photos from trips and
right.
things like that. And so I got into Lightroom, and that was
love
about the same
Lightroom.
Time. I know, I love it. And that was
love
about the same time that Scott Kelby came out here to do one of his Lightroom seminars. And they had a NAP booth there, so I just figured I'd sign up.
Which seminar? It's kind of
it
wild,
was,
actually. Was it Lightroom 2?
It was Lightroom 2.
So you were down at the convention
yep.
center? I was sitting in the front row.
That's fine. I was not even close to the front. I was way in the back.
Well, yeah, that place is so huge, though. I just
but
got lucky.
But I learned so much, and I'm glad I went.
Yeah, well, I think seminars have their place as far as learning, like, what they can provide for you over something like a workshop or hands-on experience.
Yep.
I think seminars are, like, a good overview
yeah.
to to give you an idea.
But hands-on is always better.
Hands-on is always the best. And I guess that kind of leads into the other question, because you said you've been doing photography professionally now for about a year and a half.
Yeah.
How much of that is learned from just getting out and doing it versus doing the seminars and doing the Photoshop world and the workshops? So
that is a really good question. There is really no better way to learn than just doing it.
Sure.
If you can have someone tell you 1,000 times, don't chop the guitar stock in half, don't cut off the player at the shoulder.
I saw that on Google Plus yesterday. I was like, ooh.
There'll be a blog post on that next week.
Oh, okay, blog post.
But you can have someone tell you that 1,000 times, but until you actually go out and take a photo and look at the photo and say, oh, yeah, that doesn't look right, then you're not going to necessarily understand why.
Right, right.
For some people still never understand why, but...
We won't go into that.
Yeah, that's a different topic.
That's completely a different topic. Some people own gear that they shouldn't own. I guess we could kind of broach that briefly. I know a guy, actually, who's a doctor. This is from South Carolina when I used to live out there. And he owns probably $20,000 worth of gear and has about 10 cents worth of knowledge.
Oh.
Which was actually kind of a good thing because I got my 7200 F4 L lens off of him.
Oh, there you go.
For like $300 because he didn't care. So you know, to him, it's just like, it's a lens I don't use. I want something faster, something bigger, something brighter, something shinier, you know, that kind of thing. Just always searching after the gear rather than worrying about the composition and actually how to take pictures. So that's kind of an interesting side point there when it comes to composition. But you're right. I do think you really can't learn composition just from classrooms.
Yeah, but I mean, you still can. I mean, you can get a foundation from it.
Sure.
At some point, it's going to be beaten into your head. You know, watch your background, watch your background, watch your background.
You think, wow, someone keeps telling me about that, too.
Watch your background?
Yeah, someone keeps telling me. I forget who it was.
I took this sports photography workshop actually back in beginning of May. It was right after Photoshop World, and it was down in Colorado Springs. And they had the New York Times sports photo editor. They had some of the Sports Illustrated photographers. And it was really...
How do you find
like
out about 40, all these?
That one I found out about because I looked up Dave Black's bio.
Gotcha.
And he had a link to it because he's one of the instructors.
He was one of the ones that
he's
went?
He's one of the instructors
down
there.
And
I met him at Photoshop World, so it was kind of fun to see him.
That's very cool.
But, yeah, I mean, and they do portfolio reviews, and
that's
you do
awesome.
Hands-on critiques and things like that, and that really helped me. I mean, I still have Brad Smith, who's the New York Times sports photo editor, in my head all the time. Watch your background. Watch your background.
That's cool.
You know?
But, see, at least that way you're keeping it in mind, and that's, I think, a big part of the challenge for a lot of new photographers is trying to remember everything from backgrounds to f-stops to shutter speeds and all that, and trying to get the technical blended with the creative side of things.
And there's really no hard and fast rules for any of this.
There never is.
And don't forget, photography is an art, and like all art, some people are going to like different things, and
some people
aren't.
Right.
So some people may like certain aspects of sports photography that are technically wrong according to the sports editors of, you know, magazines and stuff like that. And so they may not ever be able to get their stuff published because of that, but there may not be anything technically wrong with the photo. It still may be a good photo.
Right.
But,
well, it's like what was it, the BMX one, the bike one?
The freestyle motocross.
Yeah, the freestyle motocross one. Now, see, that to me blended both of them. Where it was creative, because you were looking at him like from dead under.
I was corner of the landing ramp, shooting up.
And it was awesome, but it was like, it wasn't just creatively inspiring, it was also very technically, I mean, it was spot on.
That was a spot on
sharp.
Shot. That was
Was that like,
good.
As soon as you took that, were you like, that's my keeper kind of thing?
And I try not to look too much at the back of the camera, because then you miss the next guy.
Right.
But I remember scrolling through, and I'm like, that might be a good shot.
That might be a keeper. We might have to look at that one bigger.
That was good. And that was, I usually don't do too much retouching, you know, I use On One Photo Tools a lot.
Oh, okay.
But that one I decided I had to absolutely throw in the On One.
Yeah. It looked really great. So check out her Nat portfolio to see the images we're talking about. If you go to photoshopuser.com, / your username, it's like Michelle Hedstrom,
M. Hedstrom.
Or M. Hedstrom over at
There's
Nat.
There's no A in Hedstrom.
And we'll throw a link to it as well. So don't stop to write that down again. But it's funny you mentioned about the On One thing. We already talked about Lightroom a little bit. One thing that also might be helpful for other photographers that are listening to this, because I know everyone's always interested in workflow. And I'm probably not helping anybody by encouraging more discussion of it, because it's not always about workflow. It's always about getting out and shooting, getting
experience
that way.
You still have to have a good workflow, though.
But you have to have a good workflow, and it's just something I've been harping on and pounding on for 5 years now, probably. And when I see successful people out there, I always want to talk to them, what's your workflow? How are you doing this? So lead me through, if you will, a day in the photography life of Michelle Hedstrom.
Day in the photography. So coming back, I just shot something.
Right. So you
just shot a concert.
You just shot a concert, or you just shot a sporting event. You get back to the house. What do you do?
I get back to the house, throw the memory cards in the computer. I import everything in Lightroom. Usually, immediately, I just put everything in one folder. Like, for instance, for the Winter Park Music Festival,
mm-hmm.
I shot Skid Row and Warrant. But
oh, wow.
Just to save import time, I put them all in the Skid Row folder, and just in Lightroom later, I move the Warrant photos out into their own folder.
Okay.
Then what I usually do...
So you do a Lightroom dump.
Yep, I do a Lightroom dump. Then still in Lightroom, I go into the catalog.
Okay.
And I use the flags. This is when I use, you know, I use the pick flag if it's something that I really like. I use reject to get rid of the really bad ones or the ones that I don't like, and then or I'll just leave it.
So let's back up. When you're doing your importance of Lightroom, because a lot of people are always asking about this whole concept of tagging their pictures.
Oh, in terms of keywording?
Yeah, like keyword tagging. Where would you, like when you did the Warren and, I'm sorry, who's the other one?
Skid Row.
Warren and Skid Row. Did you just tag that as like band, photography, Colorado?
Yeah, I don't do a whole lot of keywording, believe it or not. I definitely throw in my own metadata with, you know, copyright notice, my name, email address, phone number. I do rename all the photos. I have a photo naming convention that I use.
Oh, what's your convention?
I basically knew, and I read this, there's a book called The Damn Book.
Love The Damn Book.
Okay,
Peter
so,
Crowe.
Yep. So
321, I use that for my asset management all the time,
yep,
too.
Yep, so that's what I use. So I use the first three letters of my last name, underscore, four-digit year, two-digit month, two-digit day, underscore, and then the file number to get uniqueness. And that way, honestly...
Do you still find your photos?
Yeah, well, I have folders. We have a photo server, and on the server, I have everything broken up into quarters.
Okay.
So I'll have, like, 2011, first quarter, January through March.
Second quarter.
I'll have snowboarding. So it'll have all my snowboarding pictures from that quarter.
So do you have folders with categories inside that quarterly folder?
I try not to do too many categories. So, for instance, I have one called family, which is just all my family photos from that quarter. I do break it out by, if I do a concert shoot, then by band for sure. So I'll Skid Row, Warrant, Michaels, things like that.
So you actually did that after you did your import then?
I do that during the import.
Oh, during the import, okay.
Yeah, on now, import I'll do that.
Now, when you're doing your import, do you use, because I know some people like to take the import dialog on the right-hand panel there.
Yeah.
And they'll start attaching either keywords or they'll do like camera calibration
I do that sometimes. I definitely do all the metadata add there just because I know I'm going to add the metadata to everything.
Mm-hmm.
So I just do it right there and then. And if I do any keywording, sometimes I'll do it there depending on what it is. Yeah, for the Skid Row Warrant stuff, I think I tagged it immediately as Winter Park Music Festival, concert, and music. And I think I put hairband on there, too.
Hairband.
And then later on, when I actually was
How
going through the photos.
How about big hairband?
Yeah, big hair. Well, they don't have big hair anymore.
Well, it's true, they don't.
I mean, it's 2011.
They've changed their look just a little bit.
Little bit. What's interesting is a lot of them actually kind of look the same. They're just older.
Really?
Yeah.
See, I didn't even check that you got. Now, do you publish those?
Yeah, those. I wrote two different articles for the Examiner. I just wrote one on Skid Row and one on Warrant.
All right. So we'll find out both those articles over on your website as well. So I guess last question, when you're doing your import, do you, when you're doing the import, when you set it all up, do you do like a one-to-one preview or a minimal preview and then walk away, or do you
do your import
and then do other stuff while it's running that?
I set it up as a standard preview because I know I'm always going to want to look at the photo, you know, in a light box because that's how I do my picks and rejects.
Oh, really? So do you have like a second window that you do in like a loop view?
Yeah, well, I don't do, I let it import everything first.
Okay.
So it takes longer and I'll do other stuff. You know, sometimes if it's an evening concert shoot, I'll come back, throw the memory card in the computer, start the import, and it's ready for the next morning.
And then you go to bed.
And I go to bed, because
yeah.
I'm not going to stay out till, you know, I have a kid.
Morning.
I'm not going to stay out that late waiting for the import stuff.
Right. Yeah, I think I've done that on a couple occasions where it says, like, 82 minutes left to import. I'm
yeah.
Like, oh, screw this.
And a lot of it depends on what preview you select.
Right.
But I'll do the standard preview, which is a little bit bigger than the minimal, because
right.
I usually don't use the one-to-one unless I'm looking at a photo. I'm like, is that in focus? And then I'll do the one-to-one.
Right. So you just use standard for most of your stuff
yeah.
then. Okay, cool. All right, so you finished your import now. And then you mentioned that you use the on-one filter effect.
Sometimes.
So when do you make that distinction where it's like, okay, this photo is done. No, I want to take this one into on-one.
It depends what I want to do with it. For the concert stuff, I'd say 99% of the time, I just do the adjustments in Lightroom.
Okay.
Usually the concert stuff I don't bring into on-one at all. I'll bring those into Silver Effects, Nick Silver Effects 2.
Nick Silver Effects 2.
If I want to convert it to black and white.
Right.
What I'll do actually for that is actually in Lightroom they have the convert to black and white button.
Yep.
And if it's going to look good as a black and white, I want to know before I bring it into Nick. So I'll
right.
just click that button quick. And if it has possibilities, then I'll bring it into so Nick.
If it has a PO, okay, let's take it into Nick
yeah.
now and really massage that out.
And then for the sports stuff, most times I just leave it. I do the editing in Lightroom. I'll copy settings from one photo to the other.
Oh, just all the way
the
down.
Settings.
Gotcha.
Yep, once I get the white balance and exposure correct.
So is that pretty much all you do inside Lightroom is white balance, exposure, and maybe a little bit of
sharpening, noise reduction for the concert stuff.
Right, because you're probably shooting really low on
it
that.
It depends what it is. The Winter Park Music Festival is great. It was during the day, so I was
oh,
at
yeah.
ISO 100 the whole time.
That must have been nice.
But then
that,
I'm shooting.
Nice
it was amazing. And then I shot at like the Ogden Theater or the Grizzly Rose where you're at
nice.
ISO 2500, so
right.
you definitely have to have noise reduction in there.
Right, and then you're also shooting wide open too, so that
exactly.
makes it more challenging yep, to have focus right on there.
Yep.
So how do you deal with that? I guess that kind of leads to the next question. Actually, did we finish the post-production? No, we didn't.
Oh, no, we didn't. So most of
up.
The sports stuff I'll leave. If I want to kind of, if it's a photo that I think that I really like already, like it's definitely going to be one of my portfolio shots,
right.
then I'll bring it into on-one and maybe just, you know, do that little grungy athletic stuff,
sure.
throw some extra contrast on the athlete.
Oh, what's his name, the guy that does that? There was a guy that popularized that a while ago.
Oh, yeah, I can't remember his name.
You know who I'm talking
about. Yeah, I know
about.
Who you're talking about. I can't remember what it is.
Grunge effect or whatever.
And I don't really do a lot. I just do a high-pass filter
okay.
as well. Just a little touch of everything.
Just
to pop it.
So you mentioned high-pass filters. Are you also using Photoshop then?
No, I do it straight in on-one. If I'm just gonna high pass, then I'll just leave it and take it in Photoshop and leave it. But if I wanna add a different effect, then I'll throw it in on-one.
Gotcha. Okay, so you've done all your flagging, picked out the photos that you want, you've done your post-production on those, take them through on-one or take them through Photoshop, then what?
Okay, so then I've got my picks. You know, which is the flagging stuff.
Right, so you've got what?
So now I have to decide if I'm going to do an article for the Examiner. I try to include anywhere between 10 and 20 photos.
Okay.
Usually more between 10 and 15.
Okay.
Because I don't want to have too many photos that look the same. Because
right.
when you're at a concert, you can have, you know, 20 great shots of the singer, but 10 of them are going to look exactly the same.
Right.
Usually. So I'll look through those, pick out the best ones, and then I'll five-star those, and I create a smart collection for that shoot. Saying, okay, here's for Warrant, the folder's name is Warrant, the photo is flagged and five-starred, and
right.
these are the ones I want to use for the slideshow.
And then for the Examiner, do you just upload those straight to the web, or do you have like an FTP location you dump
into?
No,
it's a web-based uploader
okay.
that they use. So I just, you know, upload my photos there, write the article,
oh, okay.
and boom, I'm done.
So do you ever put them out in, like, your own personal gallery as well?
I do. If I have a really, 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 really good shot, then I'll put that in my portfolio.
Oh, two reallys.
Yeah.
Really,
well, you know,
really
portfolio
really.
Is supposed to be your best of the best of the best
right.
of the best.
The top 1%
exactly,
instead of the top 5%.
Exactly. So I'll rotate my portfolio photos as necessary.
Cool.
I've been uploading folders to Google Plus a lot.
Right.
And I still do, I actually do have a Facebook fan page for my photography business, for Over Photography, so I'll upload
oh,
them
okay.
there as well. Because then, at that point, I can actually tag the band members and the athletes.
Oh, nice.
Which is really nice. So I'll do that so it gets onto their fan page. So
very cool.
It.
Wow, so you're putting these photos out in like 3 or 4, I know, we're getting like all tons of sound.
Trains, kids,
trains,
cars,
kids,
dump
cars,
trucks.
You name it, we got audio interference here. But so it's interesting because you said you're doing it first for the Examiner and then you're doing it to your own Oak Photography website. Then you also do it on Facebook. And I know you're throwing some of the stuff out on NAP too because I've seen your
yeah,
NAP
just
work
a little,
out there.
Just a little bit on NAP.
So you've got like 4 different venues though that you're publishing to.
And I haven't figured out how to combine all those yet.
Well, that's what I'm wondering, because that seems like it'd be quite the time.
It's not that bad, because
a
lot
time suck, is
you
that
can do it within Lightroom super easily. You can just set up publishing, what do they call it, services.
Right, the publishing, okay,
yeah,
so you don't
so
do
a
separate export for each of them?
I do for Google Plus.
Okay. Because I know some people, they'll do like, and for example, like 500 Pix is a new up-and-coming site
yep.
that a lot of people
Yeah, I don't really publish too much on that.
And when people publish, I noticed some people where they're publishing to 500 Pix, and there will be no watermarking, no nothing. They'll do that same photo in NAP, and there will be a watermark.
Yeah.
Or they'll do it on their Facebook page, and there will be a watermark. So it's like, I can tell that some people are publishing the same photo three different times out of Lightroom.
Yeah.
But you said you don't do that, you just stick to one export and then
yep.
publish all through that.
Yep, that's it.
Very cool.
So it's not too bad.
That's not too bad at all. So how much time do you invest then in beginning your post-production to the end of your post-production time?
It depends how many photos
it always
I've
depends.
Taken.
Okay, a typical shoot, because what? Yeah, on the Winter Park one, how many shots did you take?
Oh my God.
So a couple thousand.
So
right?
that was rare. That was different because I actually, they let me shoot their whole set.
Oh, wow, that is unusual.
So
it's usually just the first
usually
three,
you get the
right?
first three songs, and so
it.
You get a few hundred photos. I think I took, I wanted to say I took 900 photos of each band.
Oh, pretty cool.
Which isn't too bad, honestly.
Yeah,
but
that's
I was
good.
I was
especially
really
for the
watching,
whole set.
But besides the whole set, I was more careful of watching my shots, and I wasn't doing as much burst shooting.
Right.
So right, that was cool. So it was 1,800 photos, essentially, that I had to go through.
Wow. But that's atypical, probably, right?
And I did that over 2 days because I knew I was going to split up Skid Row and Warren anyway. So I did Skid Row the first day and Warren the second day.
Oh, okay. All right, so typically then on an average shoot, it sounds like you're around 300, 400, maybe 500 photos
yeah.
that you're calling from. So you've done your whole workflow. Of those 400, how many ultimately are in your final select? You said 15, 10 to 20?
The ones that I publish?
Yeah.
Probably 10 to 20.
10 to 20. And then what do you do with all the ones that aren't published?
Well, the ones that I've flagged as rejected, I delete them.
You do delete them.
The other ones I leave because I may have pictures that I flagged that
okay.
I don't publish.
Okay.
Sometimes, though, I go back to those, like especially if I want a new picture up on my blog for a blog post and I
right.
don't want to reuse one of the ones I've published already,
right.
I'll look at other ones that I flagged but haven't used yet.
So that way it gives a new look to it.
Exactly. And then I
cool.
do have the selection of photos, which I just didn't do anything with, which every once in a while I'll go back to and just cull down some more.
So how many would you say you actually end up deleting out of each any given shoot? About
that depends.
10%,
so out of 900,
50%,
I'd say like 60% probably.
Really? You're just
I'm pretty
flat out
I'm very brutal.
But that's a good thing, right? Because that means you really only
I try
do
to be
have
brutal.
The best of the best.
And
the
also
best
they start taking up a lot of server space, too.
Yes.
And you can just buy bigger hard drives.
And well, that's the thing. Is they say storage is cheap, but it's still storage.
Yeah.
That's what gets me. People, it's cheap. It's only 10 megabytes, and I've got a 2 terabyte drive.
But you really want to have, 50,000 photos.
And what are you going to do with it? That's
exactly,
my whole thing.
So.
It's going to sit on your hard drive. You're never going to publish it. You're never going to share it. So
now
why are you keeping it?
So some of them. So here's an example of one. For when I shot the National Motocross.
Mm-hmm.
No, a better one would be when I shot Amateur Motocross.
Wow.
I got a lot of different photos of a lot of different people.
Right.
And they didn't give us any rosters. I have no idea who half these people are. But I ended up keeping all of the good photos, everything that was decent,
right.
just in case any of these guys ever go pro, and I can, I have pictures of them or
right.
something like that.
So that way you can go back and
so
say,
I can
hey,
go back and, hey, I got this photo of you when you were at Thunder Valley. You know?
And you're like, oh, great. I'll take a copy of that. And
maybe.
You
never,
say, well...
But you never know if you, out and out delete everything
right.
that you're not going
to
use.
Well, I think if you've got a tax shot photo, it's a good photo. It just happens not to be
but
used.
Yes, I don't need 500 photos of Rachel Bolan from Skid Row playing guitar.
Exactly. Just the top three.
Yeah, whatever.
Or the top
10.
Five or 10.
Yeah, whatever. Right. Because a lot of them, he's doing the same stuff. He doesn't
right.
move a lot.
Right.
He doesn't have a lot of facial expressions. So. He's not one of those guys.
That's not passing judgment or anything.
Yeah. No, he's a great guitarist. Right. Still has his nose ring from the 80s.
Oh, wow.
He just looks a little bit older. Fantastic to listen to and watch, but he doesn't have a lot of facial expression when he plays.
Oh, I saw someone, they were just, it was sad how much they had aged. Oh, Rick Springfield. I saw Rick Springfield concert. Actually, this was before he came out here. This was like 3 or 4 years ago when he was in, I think, Ohio. And he just looked so haggard. I was like, dude, why are you so plain?
Hey,
no one to retire.
If you could still, if you made it big in the 80s as a singer, and someone told you you could still get paid doing it 20-some years later, 30 years later, wouldn't you do it?
I don't know about that.
He must really like it. I mean, he's playing these little clubs now, but...
Yeah. Well, I guess if there's money to be made, there's money to be made, right?
Yeah.
But you gotta love, like you just said, though, you gotta love what you're doing. Oh, and that ties into another question. When you are going to these concert photography events or sporting events where you're shooting, are there other shooters there that you're interacting with and that you network with? Or?
Definitely more, depends on the event.
Okay.
I will say that for, you know, stuff like the National Motocross, yes, they would have had a big media room. There were photographers
cool.
from Dirt Biker Magazine, all these little websites I'd never heard of that cover motocross, things
right.
like that. And yes, I do network.
So do you, like,
I want to eventually
pass
out move
cards
up.
Or?
Yeah, pass out cards, introduce myself, talk
okay.
to them. You
cool.
know, a lot of them I'll email after the fact saying, hey, it was great to meet you at
right.
such and such. Especially at concerts, you start seeing the same photographers
over
at
over.
Various concerts.
Right.
So that's kind of fun, you know, to catch up with what they're doing. And
right. And know. That also helps keep you on your toes as well, because, you know, if other photographers are there, then you're always looking for a different angle or
it's
a
more
new
fun
angle
to shoot concerts when there's no one else in the pit but you.
Oh,
that's
really?
Happened to me a couple times at the Grizzly Road.
Okay.
At the Winter Park Music Festival, they had this absolutely huge pit, and there were only two of us.
Oh, wow.
So that was great.
Yeah,
I mean, we had no problems. We had zero problems
that's
interacting
awesome.
With each other.
That's
and then there's
cool.
venues where you have, you know, 15, 20 photographers, and they have, like, a one-person wide pit, or
right.
one-person deep pit.
So you just elbow
so
to
you're
elbow.
Just not moving, basically, the whole show.
Oh, my gosh. Wow, I'm not sure I could do that. So how
yeah,
do you...
for three songs, so...
Well, I so let's say, for example, you go to a sporting event or a music event or whatever, and you're networking with these other guys. Has the networking ever resulted in, like, actual gigs or other assignments?
Not
to where?
Yet, but I have gotten... I got someone telling me that he's the photo editor up in Evergreen for
okay.
a... big slew of all the newspapers up there.
Right.
And he actually, the last time I saw him, he actually made some comments to me. He's like, the next time we're supposed to shoot the same thing, I'm just going to have you shoot for me.
Oh, nice.
So,
well, see, that always helps. And I think
that way, because he was so stressed and, you know, because he's running around trying to do everything.
Right.
And so it's easier, and since he's seen my work, and he's actually someone that I met at the sports photography workshop.
Oh, nice.
So
the one down in Colorado Springs.
Yep. He's seen my stuff. He's,
see, that's
he
awesome.
Knows me. He knows I'm a decent, nice considerate person.
I think that's a key thing too. Is you
yeah.
got to be a nice, considerate person.
And that's
you can't just,
especially in the photo pit at concerts.
Yeah,
you have to be.
You can't be rude because
no.
that's not going to get you far.
No.
I know a couple.
And
people
I've seen
like
it
that.
Too from other people, and I'm just like, wow, that security guard is never going to let you in this photo pit again. You know?
Yeah, exactly. You got to know whose elbows to rub and.
Yep. Be nice to security. Be nice to management. Be nice to the publicist.
So how do you find out, I guess that ties into another question, how do you find out who the publicists are for these different things that you want to go shooting at? Like the Winter Park one, did you just...
Sometimes it can be difficult. The Winter Park one wasn't too bad. I saw a poster in Winter Park when we were up there
okay.
about the music festival. I did a web search, found the info page on it, and
mm-hmm.
they had a link for PR.
Oh, nice. So,
so
you just contact that
I just
way.
Emailed that person. And a lot of times the email address that they write on the website might be wrong for some reason or another, but then they usually, I've never had a problem with them forwarding it to
right.
someone. Bands can be a little bit more difficult,
okay.
which I'm surprised at because you think they would want some coverage.
Right.
A lot of times I've noticed if it's not on the band website, their Facebook fan page, if you click on their info link, it actually has the name of the publicist.
See, that's cool. That's a nice little inside
scoop. And that's how I found
anyone.
The Bowling Pursuit one, because it wasn't on their webpage, but it was on the Facebook fan page.
Very cool. So, okay, well, that kind of leads into the last point that I wanted to talk about, because that was just a really good tip for someone that wants
I
to
gave you guys a great tip.
That's
just
an awesome
always
inside tip.
Look on Facebook if they have a fan page, look on their website first, and when if all else fails, do just a general search for Bowling Pursuit publicist. And a lot of times, if the band has a forum, it'll pop up as a question on there sometimes.
So do you participate in those forums as well?
I usually
no?
don't, but I probably should. How's that?
Well, there's always probably, oh, I should be doing more of this, or I should be doing less of
yes.
that. So
I'm still kind of trying to figure out all the marketing aspects.
Right. Well,
I think I'm in the same boat as everybody else.
Yeah,
so.
It's always a moving target. I think that's the thing with marketing, especially with social media being a big part of the marketing space now, where everyone has a Twitter account and a Facebook account and a YouTube account and a LinkedIn account, and you got to kind of pick and choose which ones.
You just do all of them.
Yeah, or just do all of them, but then you'll never have time to shoot,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
So, and I think that goes back to a key thing that a lot of people have mentioned in the past is running a photography business, or if you own a photography business, 90% of the time is spent marketing, promoting, and doing the business side, and then only 10% is spent shooting.
Yeah, I think Scott Bourne said that.
Yeah.
Or somebody, but I've heard that.
So
just the other day I heard that.
So would you agree with that then, having been doing this for about,
I agree with that.
What'd you say, a year and a half now, 2 years now? Is that what your ratio is now?
Probably.
Well?
That's probably about right. I mean, during the day I'm spending a lot of time trying to figure out different marketing methods, things like that.
So how do you research different marketing methods? Like, do you do test markets, like test campaigns to try and get stuff out there? Or?
I haven't gotten there yet. I'm right in the middle of trying to find out sponsors for some of the motocross guys I've been shooting.
Oh, okay.
Find out who to contact, you know, and send them maybe a light box of the photos I've taken. But
very
then
cool.
You start getting into a whole different ball of wax between editorial and commercial, because then you start having to get model releases and
right.
things like that. But if I'm contacting the athletes' sponsor, then it's not as big of an issue.
Right, because that's their sponsor. They can
but
use
finding
their own
out
athlete.
The sponsors, if you guys think that finding the publicist for a band is hard, finding out the sponsor's
for band.
Email address for like a band or for an athlete is sometimes harder.
Really?
I mean, you may know this athlete is sponsored by KTM. Finding an email address of someone to contact is very hard.
Right. Well, they probably don't want to publicize that kind of
exactly.
stuff anyway.
Exactly.
So like, if
it's
they publish it, then...
That you have to find people who might know people who
right.
might have contacted them before. Or sometimes on the, you can contact the athlete directly through Twitter or Facebook, and you can get lucky, and they'll tell you.
Right. Right. Well, and I think that kind of ties into another thing that we had mentioned that... Oh, wow, someone's coming to do a photo shoot.
Looks like a senior portrait shoot.
Yeah, a senior portrait shoot or something.
We should jump in.
We should. Just say, hey, come over. But yeah, well, I remember the first thing that actually keyed me in on you last year was when you'd mentioned, I think, in the NAP form that you were shooting at the Denver Broncos facility.
That was kind of what started a lot of this, honestly.
Or when you were doing the spring training, I was just like, how did she get in
that
there?
Was,
I think you mentioned that they had, like, Canon lenses or Canon gear that they were letting you test.
Yeah, the Denver Broncos
and
thing was kind
working.
Of
And I was working. I was just like, oh, my God, that's so awesome. I got to find out how she found out about
that. That one was pure luck, and that's what kind of, even though I've always liked sports, that's what kind of made me realize that, whoops, I'm kicking something, made me realize that it's possible for me to start doing it,
right.
you know, as a general person with camera or whatever. But Mike's Camera, which is a camera store in Denver and Boulder, had some promotion through Canon where they were giving out tickets to shoot at the Denver Broncos training facility.
Nice.
If you were a Canon shooter. And
right.
I got lucky. I jumped in the car, drove 30 minutes to the Boulder store, and I was the first one there. So I guess I'm the only one who sits on Facebook all day. But
No. A lot of us do that.
But I was able to, so I snagged one. I went out. I met a bunch of people. A couple of them I actually still talk to.
Right.
And I was looking at my photos. And, you know, this is the first time I'd really shot football like that.
Right.
And my photos weren't the best. They weren't the worst, though. They were definitely, I saw potential in them, you know, compared with some of the other people that were there. I'm like, well, maybe this is something I should look into.
Right. And I think that's always how it starts. It's like, ooh, you know, you get a little taste of it, of where you could possibly take it. And
there's a couple of them, yeah. I mean, a lot of the ones I thought were good aren't, you know, I look at them now, I'm like, yeah, those aren't that good.
Yeah,
but then there's a couple of them where I actually did the right thing. And I'm like, yeah, that one's actually still pretty good.
So do you still do any, is it still stringer? Is that the word for it? Where someone's a stringer for a certain organization? So, like, are you still stringing or taking photos for the Denver Broncos?
No, it was just that one time. The Broncos is something, the NFL is really, really, really difficult to get any sort of photo pass
for. So you're doing more regional work then?
Yeah.
Just in the Colorado area?
Yep.
Okay. So when doing the regional work, is that what the goal is? Is start with the regional and then move up to the national level?
I haven't figured that out 100% yet. Right now I'm just
taking
kind of enjoying what I'm shooting learning different sports. You know, I'd never shot drag racing before this year. I've now shot it 4 times.
Oh, wow.
And every time I learn new angles and get better at it, go where the other photographers aren't and to see if I can make a shot work.
That's interesting. Go where the other photographers aren't.
Well, if they're all shooting at the starting line, go somewhere else.
I think that's a great tip, though.
I do that at concerts, too, especially in the photo pit. If there's a packed photo pit, and every photographer is starting on the right side, I start on the left side.
Right. And it's another great tip, because so often you see, like, I've been to a couple workshops where the leader of the workshop will have you standing out on a ridge, you know, wherever, taking a picture of a landscape or whatever it is you have to be doing, and then you'll see like 20 photographers standing there with their tripods.
Yep.
And the instructor's shouting out, you know, F8 and be there, you know, or whatever. And everyone's looking
too
at that, and I'm just like,
then there's
that's
nothing
not
wrong.
The only view
that
here,
may
people.
Be one of the best shots. But yes, that is not the only view. There's always another angle.
Right. I think Joe McNally was one that said it best. He's like, there's
he's
not
the one
just...
I pictured when you said that, too.
Yeah, where he's like, it's not just your tripod down, you know, this is it. This is the location. No, there's more
move
to
around.
It than that. You know, look up, look down, look behind you.
Yeah, that's what a lot of people
I can't tell you the number of
run.
Times I've gotten the best shots from any place where I've taken a picture of something and I've gotten up and I've looked behind me just before leaving, and I'd be like, oh, my God. That's the shot I should have been taking,
yeah.
You know, and then just twisting around and taking that shot from there.
But, and some of the shots you try may not work at all.
Right.
I mean, I have had to delete like 100 motocross photos because I took a shot, I was trying something at the track, didn't work.
And
didn't
well,
come close to working.
I think Dave Black actually said that, where you have to be able to take risks, though.
Yep.
You know,
Dave Black is the one. If you guys want a great action sports,
we're pointing down to the recorder.
I'm pointing
again.
Down to the recorder. Look up Dave Black's website.
Yeah,
he is the king.
Well, he's on Scott Kelby's blog today.
He's on Scott Kelby's blog today. He has a Kelby training class on Action Sports Flash, and if anyone's going to Photoshop World in a few weeks, he will be there.
Oh, I wish I could go.
You should. You just jump on a plane. You
I
should
just don't have the funds for it.
Just go
the
for the exhibit, Dave.
They gotta fly.
Jeez, Dave.
Yeah. Anyway,
that's
anyway,
a segue.
That's another segue, but I don't want to go into that. Well, actually, that's kind of a good segue, though, because when you first started getting into photography, clearly you didn't know about Photoshop World or didn't, like, not everyone has the resources to do everything all at once.
I don't even remember how I found out about it.
Where you can't go to the workshop that you want to go to or the Photoshop World that you want to go to, or you can't buy the lens that you want or the camera that you want, or you're running out of computer storage space or whatever it is. How do you fund these kinds of things? Do you get like small business loans? Do you get help from family and friends? Because I know a lot of people out there who are like starting into photography and they're like, I just can't afford this. And it's like, well, I always tell them, it's not the gear. You know, don't worry about the gear. Worry about getting the shot with the lens that you have.
Exactly.
You know, the best camera is the one that you have
first.
With you. But you still benefit from doing things like a Photoshop World or a workshop or a seminar.
Yep.
So it's a matter of figuring out how to address those expenses, because when you're starting out, you don't have a reserve to fall back
on. No. Well, we've been lucky in the past with both our computer jobs, myself and my husband,
right.
You know, being at the right place at the right time.
No, I can't imagine Apple was...
Live comfortably. Well, I was at Apple during a down period.
Oh, really?
But we were at Netscape when it got bought out by AOL, and my husband was at Yahoo for a while, and it was nice.
So you've dropped a couple big names here. You mentioned Apple, you mentioned Netscape, you mentioned Yahoo. And then who was the other AOL?
Yeah, AOL bought Netscape.
AOL bought, okay. AOL, so you were at
AOL
Netscape.
AOL Time Warner bought Netscape.
AOL Time Warner bought Netscape, and you said you worked at Yahoo for a while. What kind
I was
of work
at
did
I was at Yahoo for, that is a very good question. I think I was at Yahoo for 3-4 years.
And what did you do, prior to your photography life, then? What kind of work did you do in, I don't want to say IT so generically, but
yeah, it's kind of like I was doing, I did technical training for a while at Yahoo.
Okay.
And then we moved out to Colorado. I obviously couldn't do that anymore because
right.
It was in person, and I was here, and they were in California.
Yeah.
And then I switched to doing more kind of engineer tech support and fixing bugs for some of the internal applications, web-based applications.
Like program debugging, then?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Essentially.
Very cool.
But yeah, but I like this much better. This is more fun. It's definitely, I didn't even know I had a creative side until I started doing this.
I don't think it's probably more, yeah, right? We're always just like, this sucks. I need more creative. And I guess that's a great final question for it, is how do you keep pushing yourself to new creative approaches or new creative visions if you're always shooting for the examiner? Like, do you ever go out and shoot just for yourself?
I kind of do counter to shooting for myself because this is the kind of stuff I want to shoot anyways.
Oh, okay.
And so to me, it's kind of a, it's still a big deal for me when I get a press credential for a band that I like or...
That's when you're like, yeah!
You know, it is. It's like, well, let's see if I can get one because it's cool. You know, I never would have thought when I was listening to Bret Michaels when I was 12 years old that I'd actually be sitting here shooting it. I didn't know he'd still be performing, honestly, but, you know.
The people were out there like saying, who's Bret Michaels? You know, yeah. Trying to think
Poison, look it up, you know.
80s bands. There's a big hair band for you, right? Poison
was
a big,
yep.
Big hair band.
But and I really enjoy it. And like I said, the Examiner is a good place where you can get your feet wet and
right.
Have full control over what you shoot and what you publish. And so
that's
they,
cool.
I think they will tell you if it's not up
to
par. So
yeah, you need to rewrite that.
But yeah, I'll do, like, you know, I bring my camera to various places now. I mean, I was shooting sports and concerts so much that I think it was like a month and a half I forgot to shoot my kids. So when I'm looking
like,
at my photos,
I'm
looking at my photos and it's like motocross, drag racing, baseball, soccer. Where's my child?
I have a child in here.
Yeah.
I think
so, but yeah, I do need to definitely just get out more and shoot kind of without doing anything.
And
in particular.
So is that how what you want to be doing, or is that, I guess the question more is, how do you, like, what's the way, best way to say this? How do you aspire to, I shouldn't say aspire, but how do you work to expand your creative vision? Because if you're always shooting these sporting events and band events, how do you come up?
Well, I still have a lot I need to learn in both those genres, too.
I don't know if you're already shooting it.
I'm already shooting it, but there's always room for improvement. I haven't been doing it that long, and so I'm definitely
How do you keep improving, then, if you are always, quote-unquote, in the trenches doing it?
But I can improve on the way I'm shooting it. You know?
Or is it the in the trenches
like if
that
I look
it
at,
helps
if,
you improve?
It's in the trenches that helps improve. Like, if I'm shooting a band,
right.
And I notice I'm always cutting off the guitar stock of the guitarist in a very unflattering spot...
There's a blog post coming out next week on
Then I need to stop doing that.
Right.
So I'm more aware of it next time, and I'll try different angles. It's like, wow, I always shoot the lead singer, and he looks like this. Every band, I need to move over here maybe and try this shot instead.
And you remember that kind of stuff as you go from one event to the other?
I got to
remember to do this.
Or
it'll
only take a couple times before, and I'll look at the photos again. It's like, oh, yeah, I wanted to try that one
thing.
Like,
oh, damn it, I forgot.
But next time, you know.
Next time. There's always next time.
So.
Well, Michelle, thank you so much for coming on. We're shaking hands with the audience, too. Thanks for coming on the show. Yeah. Hey, nice meeting you. And we'll definitely have to get together again. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in to listen to the Learning Digital Photography podcast. I think this is episode number 64.
Wow. Thanks, Jason.
So, yeah, it was good having you on, and we'll have another podcast coming out soon.